Hey, good morning, everybody. Alan Ellis here with the Outdoorsman Radio Show, joined this morning again by my gracious and beautiful wife, Miss Robin. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning. I'm awake.
I see that.
I told him I was sleeping in and not coming on this morning, but I didn't.
Well, I appreciate that. So your you know, magnitude of fans out there would not be happy if it was just me anymore.
I don't think anybody would mind, but that's okay. Right. Hey, look, I told you if you ran late yesterday, I'd do the show by myself. I don't know what would have happened, but
yeah. Well, I don't know either, but
yeah, I was worried about him getting home, Chris, because he got up at 1:30 and left here in the morning.
I did yesterday.
Or he got
morning.
Up at 12:30, left here at 1:30.
Well, you had a little. You had a little bit of a hike.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had to be out in Washington County near Harper's Ferry at 4:30 in the morning.
Ah.
So I want to allow myself plenty of time, and I did. I actually was almost 45 minutes early rolling into my buddy's driveway, and, you know, I tried to slow down and tried to take my time and all this stuff. It just didn't work. So what did President Bush say? I misunderestimated or something like
remember.
That, whatever that word was. I gave myself 3 hours and only needed like 2 hours and 15 minutes. So
yeah, that just gave you all that extra time to sit down, relax, and just take everything in.
I told him, I said, sleep in the driveway. Don't bug the guy. Just sleep.
I did. I pulled in the driveway and left the radio on, kind of, you know, turned the lights out and put my head back. And he didn't even know I was there, which was pretty cool. But he lives back in the wilderness in Washington County, and I mean it's a development, but the houses are far enough apart that you think you're back there by yourself. So pulled in the driveway and you know just kind of sat there. I knew somebody was up because there was a light on, you know, in the house somewhere. And about 20 minutes later, he came out and we greeted each other, had a cup of coffee, and all that. So. But let's talk about the hunt. We hunted in the same little farm that we hunted last year when I actually took my first turkey. My buddy's name is Bobby Dutrow, well known among the turkey hunting world here in Maryland. He's a fantastic caller. He thinks like a turkey. You know, he tries to understand what the turkeys are thinking when he calls, or what they're doing when they call back, or when they gobble, or where they are, or what they're doing, and he knows this area like the back of his hand. So, you know, we had one gobbler way distant from us answer us, actually two, one to our left and one in front of us, and we tried to work those birds, and then we had a live hen show up and start calling. Down the way, we didn't see her, but we could hear her, and could hear her walking. So he said, well, sometimes if you annoy a hen enough, she'll come looking for a fight and bring the gobbler with her, that might be with her, bring the gobbler with her to you. So we played with the hen for a while, and she went the other way and went out in the field, you know, out of sight. There's no field that we could see, but that we know by the calls that they were out there. So then a shootable bird came in, a little Jake, similar to the one that I shot last year. And I told Bobby, I said, you know, first thing, I said, no Jakes today. I'm going to concentrate on Longbeard. And he said, okay. So the Jake came in to about 20 yards and messed around there for a bit and didn't shoot him. And off he went. And we worked the big gobbler for most of the morning. One or two mature birds, and never got him any closer than about 200 yards, and you know never saw him. So, but it's a fun hunt, always fun when there's activity, always fun when you can hear birds, and see birds. So,
got a little hot for you yesterday.
Man, was it hot! Oh my, it was 66 or 68 degrees when we started in the dark pre-dawn. And, you know, I was overdressed. I just wear, you know, regular what kind of pants that I wear hunting. And then I had a pair of coveralls on over them, but the coveralls are insulated. I told Robin last night, I need to get a pair of you know, uninsulated bib overalls so I can, you know, I can wear them and not be uncomfortable. But yeah, it was warm. And then we went back to Bob's house and had, he's got a little place that, that he has right near the house there. And he said, I'm going to call and see if anything, you know, answers here. And he, that was, it was noon now. So you can hunt all day, right now through the end of the season. And, he called and nothing happened there. So he said, well, let's go back out to where we were and set up somewhere else. So we did that. And then, set the decoy up, a beautiful little creek bottom and, you know, shady where the birds should have been. And we were, I guess as the crow flies, 300, 400 yards from where we had sat in the morning, but, you know, working basically the same birds. And we made a little tour to see if they were out in the fields, and they weren't. So that meant they were still in the woods where we were, but just nobody answered. So we gave that an hour and quit about 1 o'clock. So, but Bobby is, he's dedicated craftsman as far as turkey calling is concerned. And he doesn't, you know, we could have set up on a travel path, but he won't ambush a turkey. He doesn't believe that that's fair chase, you know, ambushing a turkey on its way to the, on its way to the roost or anything like that. So, you know, he says the art of turkey hunting is to, is calling. And I said, okay, fine. And I liked his quote. And he said, patience kills more turkeys than any amount of calling. And I thought, you know what? That's good. And sometimes he would, cluck or crow call or something and get an answer from the gobbler, and he wouldn't call again for 20 minutes, half hour, you know, just to see what the, just to see if the gobbler would get curious enough to come in. So it was a good time, good time. And for those of you who are not turkey hunters out there, what you're doing is going against nature. You're trying to make a male turkey come to the sound of a female turkey. You're trying to, in the real world, the male turkey gobbles and the female turkeys are attracted to the gobble and they go to the male. So what you're trying to do is go against nature, make the sound of a female, make the male curious enough to come to the female. So, I mean, it works tens of thousands of times around the country, but, you know, it is kind of against a turkey's nature. You're appealing to, you know, his need to breed, and it's fascinating to do that. It really is. So, 410 WCBM 680, 410-922-6680. Anyway, we got home last night about 4 o'clock, exhausted, and on the way home got a call from our buddy Rudy. Former biologist with the Maryland Department of Natural Resources Fisheries Service. And Rudy will be joining us the next hour. We're going to talk about striped bass mortality with circle hooks and talk about the striped bass a little bit more. But the summer season kicks in today. Is there anybody out there that's on their way to going fishing and wants to give us a call? Tell us a little bit about it. We'd be glad to hear from you. Today is the new regulations kick in for the summer season, summer fall season. Open today through August 15th and then closes again till September 1st through and then runs through December 10th. Anglers will be able to keep one striped bass per person per day with a minimum size of 19 inches. The season will be closed on all other dates. During the closure period from August 16th through August 31st, anglers will be prohibited from targeting striped bass, which includes catch and release and charter boats. During a chartered fishing trip, the captain or mate would not be permitted to land or possess striped bass for personal consumption. So there it is. If you are an angler aboard a charter boat, you may keep one fish. You cannot add to your bag by catching the captain's or the mate's fish. Nor can the captain or mate catch a fish and give it to you. So that's how that works. The season dates are valid only to the end of the 2020 season. At the end of the 2020 season, Fishery managers and scientists will review the effectiveness of these measures based on observations and data and may revise the regulations accordingly. The department reminds all anglers that all conservation efforts implemented by the department last year, including the required use of circle hooks, remain in effect. More information on how to properly catch and release can be found on the department's website. Well, we're going to tell you more about that in the next hour with Rudy, because Rudy's the guy that conducted all the striped bass mortality studies years ago, including the use of circle hooks. So, why all the changes? Why the change to the spring season, which is now over? And the way I understood, some people said the spawn was late, perhaps because of the rain, perhaps because of the cold. We know that from talking to Uncle Dale that it is just the amount of the photo period, the amount of daylight that triggers the spawn, and not just the temperature of the water, but the temperature of the water has a lot to do with it. So a couple of factors in effect for the spawn, but those in the know are saying the spawn is late, and guys were still, as of yesterday, catching fish over 35 inches, so I guess that's okay. The 2018 benchmark stock assessment for striped bass indicated declines in the striped bass population. This is coast-wide. So the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission has determined that a conservation measures are needed for the 2020 fishing season to reduce the amount of striped bass being removed. This includes dead discards, which are fish that die after being caught and returned to the water. So that's the reason. There are a lot of floaters out there. A lot of floaters out there. So, Oh, first sip of coffee. Whew. Need that. You're being quiet over there, babe.
Who, me?
Mm-hmm. No?
This is usually your informational time, so I was just...
Oh, well,
I'm still semi in a coma from yesterday after losing all my sleep. I didn't sleep after he left, so.
I don't know why. She wanted me to be safe. I'm always safe. I operate on a basis of, you know, self-preservation. So.
Uh-huh.
So I found this interesting, though, in the press release. Listen to this, folks. In an effort to improve data collection for striped bass, okay, they want to get more information about who's catching what. The department has launched a pilot program of the e-reporting with FACTS, F-A-C-T-S, system. And I guess this is a system where you electronically let the department know that you are sailing today, and at the end of the day, you're going to report your catch. This is for charter captains, okay? This program is for charter boats to begin this spring and continue through the summer and fall season. And I hadn't heard about this. Maybe I didn't read it carefully enough, but this program is in effect. So here's what the bonus is for participating. Participating captains will be required to use FACTS, and as a participant in the pilot program, they will be allowed to keep 2 striped bass per guest per trip. But only one of those fish may be greater than 28 inches. So if you are taking a charter boat, you might want to ask them if they participate in the e-reporting with the FACT system, and it looks like you'll be allowed to keep 2 fish, not 1 fish. 1 fish, 2 fish.
Red fish, blue fish.
Red fish, blue fish, but striped bass. So I didn't know that. It says FACTS is an e-reporting system that will provide real-time data on harvest, discards, and fishing activity. Electronic reporting in Maryland requires that participants send a trip start hail before they leave the dock and a trip end hail before they return to the dock. Additionally, restrictions and guidelines remain in place to help prevent the spread of COVID-19. The latest updates are provided on the DNR website. So, there you go. Calls, questions, comments, 410-WCBM-680, 410-922-6680. Came across the Bay Bridge yesterday. First time I've been to the Western Shore in almost 2 months. The collection of sponsorships and advertising is considered a non-essential business. So even though that's our livelihood, we were restricted to being at home for 2 months. And the first day across the bridge into on the Western Shore was yesterday at what time did I text you and tell you I was across the bridge? 2 o'clock in the morning. Came back, no problem getting across the bridge. They've changed the toll system. Did you know they changed the toll system?
Yeah, that should have been changed a long time ago.
Yes, it should have. It should have. But it's all now electronic collection of your toll. And very interesting coming across the bridge with not having to go through a toll booth.
We think about it. I'm 57 years old, and I've never gone across without having to stop and pay a toll.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, I mean, there's not even a booth there. You just go.
Same as so it's like Delaware now.
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, if you want to pay with cash or something, I don't think you can.
You can't. But they send you a bill.
Yeah.
And it costs you more money if you don't have Easy Pass.
Yeah. So they're forcing you to use Easy Pass rather than cash. Chris, how are you doing this week?
I can't complain.
I thought maybe I woke you up. I don't like reading all this stuff, but when there's new regulations and stuff, I like to read them, even though some people may zone out. Unfortunately, I think enough people pay attention. But the regulations are there, and they're important to share with our listeners. Don't you agree?
Yes, I do. And you have to bear with me because we got a caller.
Oh.
I got to screen the call first. So.
I got it.
Talk in a minute.
We'll talk in a minute, Chris. So Chris is good. We have a joint text. This is how I know who's on the line. We have a joint text, and Chris texts us, and we know exactly who's in there.
Yeah, we went through this new learning how to communicate before the self-quarantine or self-stay-at-home order or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it was.
We had to learn how to communicate without seeing each other face-to-face.
Yep, and, we love this system where we just, set the alarm for 4:30 and are on the air in 30 couple minutes, and, it's 5 minutes at the most to set the system up in the morning, mm-hmm. Turn everything on.
Well, providing you don't have a windstorm the night before.
That's true.
Robin has a heart attack and spends 45 minutes.
Yeah, we did the on the phone thing. That wasn't good. So, who we got, Chris?
We have Emmett on the line.
Oh, Emmett. Okay.
Morning, Emmett.
Morning, Emmett.
Hey, morning. How you guys doing?
Good. You?
Doing good. Hey, Robin. I want you to know I enjoyed you guys' program last week. But unfortunately, I left my cell phone at work, so I couldn't call in. But Robin, I really enjoyed how you stuck up for yours. You were feisty last week, Robin. It was really good.
I'm very passionate when it comes to the people I love and being safe. So.
Well, yeah, you are, and it's good. You're kind of apologizing for it, but I say, oh, no, it added a little spice to the program. So I thought that was very good.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm not sure how it's all that way, but.
All right. Well, look, we can agree to disagree. And, we have this conversation a lot during the week, So it's not anything different to carry it on to the radio show.
We're on the same page about being safe, but on different pages of how to do it sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. And I find myself kind of going back and forth on it, from one to a little bit. So, but anyway, Alan called about doing some trout fishing down there at Gunpowder.
And he put 200. They put all the excess trout in. They stocked 200,000 trout this week.
Really?
Yeah. Everywhere. Everywhere.
Well,
there's a whole list online. I should probably share that list. But yeah, no question.
I mean, because when I got my license. Back in April when I got it again, they printed out the stocking schedule for me. And but anyway, I was fishing out there in the gunpowder. Guy was telling me, he goes, I was one of the few catching anything, but I was only catching small ones. Like last week, I caught like about an 8-inch brown trout.
Right.
So I said, well, something's better than nothing.
Yeah. Is that what you were texting me about, a skipper?
Yeah, but no, this is a different one. This was a little bigger.
Oh.
the rainbow, I caught the rainbow, a fly that looks like an ant. And a guy,
right.
A man had showed him to me, was fishing down there below Hereford High School.
Right.
I said, that looks good. So, got a rainbow on that. But this one, there's a guy in Bel Air, and he makes these flies. They kind of look like a SpongeBob SquarePants.
Okay.
And it was little, whiskers on it. And he sells them to a shop out there on, Mount Carmel Road. And,
right. Well, I know where that is.
I've caught, there's some rainbows and some, this one, a brown trout on it, just floating it down the stream and just working it back up.
Right. Interesting.
The only thing is, I'm not catching any keepers, though. You know, I'm not going to keep a 7-inch trout, you know.
No, No, but here's how it works. DNR conducted limited trout stockings throughout Maryland this spring in an effort to alleviate overcrowding at state fish hatcheries and also provide opportunity for recreational anglers. Following the governor's executive order that suspended all field activities, they were following his order. So I'm just trying to skip through this and read it on my phone. Without the scheduled stocking, state hatcheries lacked room and needed to continue the production for future seasons. So as trout and facilities continued to grow, they were at the risk of high mortality. Removing fish and stocking them into public waters became an urgent matter. To date, the department has stocked 211,450 brown, golden, and rainbow trout across the state at the locations below. Annual production of our hatcheries is about 300,000 trout, so this completes the trout stocking for the spring. There'll be another round in the fall. So the department encourages anglers to take advantage of the incredible fishing opportunities Maryland has to offer, blah, blah, blah. So Baltimore County, Gunpowder Falls, got 7,000 trout, the lower end, and 3,000 in the upper end, and Little Gunpowder Falls got 3,500. The Patasco River at Daniels got 2,000. That's Baltimore County. In Carroll, Farm Museum Pond got 1,200. The South Branch of Patapsco got 1,400. The South Branch of the Patapsco River on Marriottsville Road got 2,500. And on River Road of the Patapsco, they got 1,250. Tawnytown Pond got 1,100. And I can go on, but most of the popular areas in Garrett and Frederick and all those areas, Deer Creek got 6,500. In Harford County, Forest Hill Pond, 500. Not that anyone would want to go to Prince George's or Montgomery to fish, but maybe the residents there would. Given the pandemic and the outbreak there, but all the popular creeks and waterways in Washington County as well. So 200,000 trout were stocked. How about that, Emmett?
That's a lot of trout.
A lot of trout. Yeah, I mean, this thing hit right at the beginning of the season, and the stocking efforts had to be suspended. So there are all these trout. And Robin, you and I have been to the hatchery, right?
I haven't. You have.
Okay.
That was right.
I'm still a novice of this. Is there any correlation between the size of the fly and the size of the fish? Like,
No, but the correlation is what the fish is eating and the mm-hmm. matching it with the fly. It's called matching the hatch.
Right.
So if there's a mayfly hatch, you want to make sure you got mayflies, mayfly fly on your line. If there's a stonefly hatch, you want to have a stonefly. But popular, the mother minnow and some of the popular flies like that, anything that imitates a small crayfish, anything that imitates a helgramite, anything that imitates a minnow where trout naturally eat is going to garner more attention rather than.
Right, this week, I'd say somewhere in the last week since I've been out, I noticed that there's the minnows have started falling in the streams.
Then you want to get some streamers. You want to get some muddler minnows and things like that that imitate those fish that are whether they're little spawn fish of some kind or whatever they are, but you want your you want your fly to imitate what's naturally occurring in the water.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, because I mean, I was getting ready to switch that, but I tell you what, I do like that SpongeBob SquarePants thing. It floats. And,
you know that? Yeah, sure.
I'll send you a picture of that. It's the funniest fucking thing.
I love to see it. Yeah, I love to see it. Well, maybe because it's funky looking, trout want to investigate it and they think it's something to eat. You know?
Oh, there you go.
Hey, put and take trout aren't that discriminating. You know, hatchery raised trout aren't that discriminating. I've used to trout fish a lot when I was younger, and I've caught them with cigarette butts in their gut. I caught one on a slice of orange peel once. I caught one on a gummy worm, just experimenting, you know. And so it's, you can easily fool a trout. You know, they're very susceptible, but that's why spin fishing is so successful, using little inline spinners, you know, like a Meps or a Panther Martin or something like that, because, you know, it imitates a bait fish. If you use a white or yellow or something like that, it just causes the strike response because they're going to eat anything. So,
well, I saw a guy out there. He was fishing with, like you say, a pink worm, but it's baseball flavor.
Uh huh.
And he was catching fish left and right. He gave me one.
Yeah.
And if I caught some trout with it, that's amazing.
Well, there you go. I mean, like I said, yeah. they're fed all kinds of stuff in the hatchery. So you just, you know, I mean, they're fed pellets or fed a formulated mix, you know, trout food. But, you know, they'll if it smells good or, you know, looks funny, they'll eat it. No question.
Now, I had thought about fishing with the spinner or another spinner in the deeper pools in a spot where it gets about 10 foot deep.
Oh, yeah, that's the best way to do it. Yep.
Okay.
Or one of the best ways to do it.
Well, listen, you guys be blessed and be safe, and it's good talking to you.
Yeah. All right,
Eric. Thank you for the
call.
Compliment earlier. That was very nice.
Well, I'd like to say I enjoyed you guys.
All right, Eric. You take care, buddy.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. I got a question. Are trout catch and release, or can you catch them and eat them?
There's certain areas where they're catch and release, and there are other areas where you can catch them and keep them and eat them.
I'm just thinking, you know, you were giving them their last meal with a orange peel and a gummy worm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I ate them.
Well, that's kind of mean.
Why is that mean?
It's like offering a, you know, inmate a piece of gum for the last meal or something. That's just bad. Anyway, I just thought popped through my head. Don't ask me why. I know.
The goal is to remove the fish from the landscape and consume it.
Yeah.
So what does it really matter what it succumbs to as far as the last thing it eats?
I don't know. It just seems...
Because it's not even going to get to, you know, really digest it and enjoy that last meal.
I just think we all deserve a good last meal. Don't ask me why. It popped in my head. I don't, like I said, some days it just goes places I can't understand either, so don't worry.
You're not the only one.
It does. It just,
you know,
goes someplace
Emmett brought out a point, though. You know, you can't please everybody. He enjoyed our banter back and forth about the differences.
And I got in trouble for it last week.
So. No, you didn't get in trouble for it. Not from me.
Not from you.
No, but we had negative comments. You know, well, we don't talk enough about fishing and crabbing. That's all I want to hear. Well, guess what? The conversation that we had regarded what you were allowed to do and what you weren't allowed to do and how to in the outdoors when it comes to fishing. And you said I was flippant when I was reading the regulations. Well, yeah, maybe because the press release was so repetitive with every activity you had to practice social distancing and, you know, and no more than 10. And it was every single topic, no matter what. And I noticed that in this press release on the spring season, basically it says, let's see, where is it? Oh, Yes. Additionally, restrictions and guidelines remain in place to help prevent the spread of COVID-19. The latest updates are provided on the DNR website. So it didn't go into all the details that last week's press release did.
Yeah, I still think it was flippant, but that's okay.
Well, I'm okay. I'm okay with you thinking it was flippant. Wasn't intended to be flippant, but, you know. So.
Can't let you off the hook completely.
No, I know. The proposed waterfowl regulations were sent to us this week by our waterfowl manager. They are working on a press release, and I sent out a post to be put on Facebook. Now, let's see where I sent it to you, didn't I?
Which is it for Geestern Shore?
Yeah,
that's me.
Yep, Geestern Shore, G-E-E-S-E-T-E-R-N, Shore, all one word.
I tell you, we're getting a lot of good feedback about our
We are, a lot of people like that.
And stuff. People like it.
Yep. So, rather than go into all of it, I want to talk a little bit about the Atlantic population, which is the migratory birds, and the limits on that, but we'll do that. After we tell you about Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne. They're just off Beltway exit number 9. You know, fishing is now open. You can catch and release anything you want. You can go bass fishing. You can go shad fishing. You can do whatever you want on the in the waterways as long as you practice safety. You know, your safety practices regarding social distancing and so forth, but it is time to go fishing, folks. I mean, we're way past time to go fishing. So why not stop by Clyde Sport Shop? They've got live and frozen bait and minnows. They've got circle hooks for striped bass. They've got tackle for perch and trout and panfish and bass and you name it. They got all the kind of crabbing supplies you need in the world. They got all the pots and crab traps and bait, and even got the steamers and the seasoning at the end. So, you know, if you haven't been to Clyde's recently, you need to stop by. Not that that much has changed, but you might find something that you need because they're always looking to keep the latest in stock, including, you know, the new ugly stick rod and reel combinations, which are really nice. They carry Shakespeare and Pfluger and a whole bunch of other brands, including St. Croix. I mean, if you're a discriminating angler and you would like to step up your game a little bit, St. Croix is the way to go. Again, Clyde Sports Shop for fishing and hunting, 410-242-6108. That's 242-6108. 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne. They're just off Beltway exit number 9. Why not give them a call or stop by today? And you'll be glad you did. We'll be right back after this message from Battery Warehouse.
Well, the weekend underway with some sunshine to enjoy today in Baltimore. Last night, all the storms stayed north of us, Pennsylvania and New York, and a low for tonight at around 60 degrees after we reach the low 80s this afternoon. Mostly cloudy Sunday, 71 degrees, and then we're watching an area of low pressure. Hurricane Center is watching this also come up from Florida up the eastern seaboard. Northeast winds for us Monday, Tuesday, and looks like some half-inch to one-inch rainfall totals. I'm Scott Laurie Moore at the Weather Channel on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you.
I fish. I also clean local waterways so others can fish and swim. I help build public boat ramps for easy access to the water. I provide fishing and water safety education for kids. I maintain a healthy fish population so tomorrow's anglers can enjoy a catch. I prevent unwanted species from spreading into waters where they don't belong. I restore the condition of rivers to help fish and wildlife thrive. I fund long-term plans to protect our lakes and streams. I do all of these things and more, all because I buy a fishing license. When you buy a fishing license, you do a lot. In fact, every dollar from a license purchase protects and maintains your local waterways for future generations to enjoy. To learn more about how you can get your fishing license, go to takemefishing.org. That's takemefishing.org.
Talk Radio 680 WCPM.
Yes! Here comes Amos! Amos Moses was a Cajun. He lived by himself in the swamp. They hunted alligator for a living. They just knock him in the head with a stump. The Louisiana law gonna get you, Amos. It ain't legal hunting alligator down in the swamp, boy. Now everybody blamed his old man for making him mean as a snake. When Amos Moses was a boy, his daddy would use him for alligator bait. Tie a rope around his waist and throw him in the swamp. Alligator bait in the Louisiana bayou. About 45 minutes southeast of Tippecanoe, Louisiana.
You know, that song Amos Moses, grandson really enjoys that song.
When they raised up a son that could eat up his bed and groceries.
Yeah.
Named him after a man of the cloth.
Gonna make him what?
Called him Amos Moses.
Why are you gonna start singing?
Now the folks around South Louisiana said Amos was a hell of a man.
All right, let's talk to Mark in Delaware. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. You?
Good. Well, I've got a quick question for you.
All right.
Maybe there's a quick answer.
Well, I hope.
Instead of having a limit, earlier you were talking about how many fish you can keep.
Yep.
Would it be better to have a limit on how many you can catch? Because I've read that catch and release often leads to death of the fish anyway.
That is true. In particular, the striped bass are susceptible to that. And, yes, what the goal is is to target fish that are big enough to keep. So, you know, if you catch an undersized fish, yes, it goes back. And that's the goal of the circle hooks, too, is because they tend to hook a fish in the side of the mouth, and you can release them easily. You know, I tend to like to put, you know, if I'm chumming or something like that, I tend to like to bend the barb down to make it even easier for the fish to be released. Because actually the weight of the fish fights the bend of the hook, not the barb. So, excuse me. That's a good idea. Would, given human nature, would people comply, or do they just want to catch as many as they can? Do they catch the biggest one?
That's an interesting premise, actually.
It is an interesting premise. You know, why don't they do crabs by the number you catch rather than by the bushel? Because that can vary too. Smaller crabs, you can get more in a bushel.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a size limit on crabs. So why don't you just say if you catch 50 crabs or whatever that number is over that size, I mean, keep them all.
Yeah, because it just ignores the reality that there's a death rate associated with catching them in the first place.
Exactly. And that is the reason for the two-week shutdown in August.
I kind of like that.
You know, because the water temperature is so high, and the possibility, if you're, you know, the technique being used at that time, which is live lining and chumming, that technique will attract a lot of fish and a lot of undersized fish, and people will just throw them back, you know, with not a lot of regard for, you know, the health of the fish. And, you know, because they've, you know, they fought this fish to exhaustion and unhooked it, dump it back in the hot water. The surface temperature of the water, of course, is higher than the comfort level of the fish where the you know, the oxygen zone is or whatever. And, you know, they make these fish susceptible to warm water at the top when they bring them in and warm water at the top when they drop them back in, you know, so the fish is taken out of its comfort zone, shocked into a warmer temperature, taken out of the water, you know, unhooked, and then thrown back into a higher temperature water, and until it can get back to where it belongs, you know, the fish may be so stressed to the point where it's not going to survive. So
And all the physical handling disturbs the slime on the scales, which is designed to prevent infection.
Right, exactly. And you know, those upper layers where the warmer water is, they tend to be more prevalent with the teeming mycobacteria that's out there. So you know, it's right. You're right. So, but they're doing everything they can. You know, it's so difficult to control human behavior, as we have seen in the last 2 months here.
Well, it's impossible.
You know, with others. Yeah, I mean, I know it's impossible. You know.
Yeah, I mean, look at the oyster population.
The oyster population.
To their credit, they try to establish reefs, and then they find.
Yeah.
People are illegally going out and destroying the brand new reefs. It's hard to believe.
Well, I think
the bay was once spotlessly clean because it was loaded, and I mean loaded
with oysters
that are natural filters.
That's true. That's absolutely true. The problem, the only problem with that is that you have two oyster diseases that are endemic in the bay, and that's MSX and Dermo, and they cannot be wiped out, and they continue to take. That disease continues to kill basically 90% of the oysters in the bay before they can even get started. And all the conservation efforts and all the, you know, all the restocking and everything else cannot overcome those two diseases and never will be able to, unfortunately. So it's just, you know, save the bay and save the oysters and all that. It's fine if you want to spend a gazillion dollars to try and reestablish a population that cannot be reestablished. And, you know, there are also environmental factors in that, and man-made in some cases. You know, back when the bay was pristine, we didn't have, you know, 40 or 50 housing developments on each river dumping the sewage into the Chesapeake Bay, or dumping their wastewater into the Chesapeake Bay with the nitrogen and phosphorus nutrients that cause algae blooms and block out of sunlight and all the problems associated with that nutrient-rich environment. So, you know, and that's probably part of the reason why we can't get rid of Dermo or MSX either. So it's just here. It's just our bay, and, you know, it's changed. It's changed over the eons, unfortunately, not necessarily for the better. And it's left to man to manage man-made issues, you know, let alone deluges of storms and hurricanes and rainstorms and man-made pollutants and all that stuff. So, I mean, it's you know, it's amazing that it's survived what it has survived. So, just an opinion, you know, but it does flush itself twice a day, so that's a good thing. Unfortunately, that upper end, with all that silt coming in every time it rains, it just continues to. Boy, Mark, you've been encouraging this morning. You have really lifted our spirits today.
I asked the question. You're the one who has the knowledge. You could have lied to me.
Despite all that, it's a
beautiful. Go outside and I'll inhale deeply. Hope for the best.
Make sure you're in a crowded place when you do that.
Yeah.
Gosh. But no, I mean, I'm not trying to be a doubter. I'm trying to say that we've.
No, you're just laying it out the way it is.
Laying it out the way it is, but the bay has survived that, and hopefully will continue to survive. But it's not going to thrive like it did back in the day before, you know, before everybody wanted to build on the water, you know, or near the water. So, I mean, you got a bay that serves, what, 6-7 million people here in Maryland?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So,
over 6 million.
And again, given human behavior, what are we putting in that water? You know? So, anything else, Mark?
No, I think that about covers it.
But no, your point is well taken. Your point is well taken. Why not limit the number of fish you can catch? I think that's what you said. Not the amount that you can keep. Yeah. Well, and just to come back to that, you know, the fishing method is designed to catch the fish over the minimum size limit, and the DNRs couldn't be happier. If you're going to go fishing, you catch your one fish and quit and go home. Or you're six on the boat and go home, you know. But unfortunately, because of the school structure, the age structure, certain age of fish swim together in schools, you know, you might have to call 20 fish to catch one over the legal size limit. And that's why the big cry, why did you have to go to 19 inches when there's more 18 inch fish out there than you can believe. And every fish we caught was, 18 and a half inches, and we finally got one over 19. Well, how many did you actually, you know, kill to get to that? And that's an angler's familiar cry. You know, we caught 40 fish, but only six of them were legal size. And we had to release all the other ones because of the size limit.
Yeah. I have a question.
What?
And this, I know human nature and all that, you can't really control it. But once they catch their legal fish, can they still catch and release? Or?
Yeah, they sure can. Till everybody on the boat catches their legal fish.
I have an issue with that. I have an issue with a lot of things.
You need to just keep commenting the way you do. Because sometimes you're the voice of reason.
It doesn't make sense to me. If you've caught your legal fish, if all you're doing is catch and release and you can't keep another fish, then all you're doing is damages fish that are already are out there and need to be getting bigger.
Just like goose hunting. You got six guys in the pit. Limit now is six. Okay? You jump up and you shoot your one and you're done. Right?
Right.
But there's five other birds that haven't been killed. So do you unload your gun and sit there and watch your other buddies miss and only wind up with four geese for the day? Or do we have to have a limit? So
that's your other buddy's issue. Not your, never mind. I know.
I'm just telling you the reality of what happens.
I know what happens. I hear about it.
Right.
Okay. All the time.
Got it. Good point. Good point, Mark.
Okay. Thank you.
Stay safe, buddy. Have a good one.
Yeah, you too.
All right.
Have a good one, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
Take care.
Yep.
Bye.
Let's see. I got a lot of texts here. Do we have somebody on the line, Robin?
I have to look.
I'm trying to stay on topic here. I said I would take care of the goose framework. What are you doing?
My volume.
Your volume?
Yes, please.
So you can hear me?
No, so Chris can hear me, the green.
Oh, yeah, okay.
We got it. Thank
All
you.
All right. Okay. The federal framework for the Atlantic population, these are the migratory geese, 30-day season may be held between November 15th. Did you see if we have any callers?
Yeah.
Who's on the line?
Nobody.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I saw if we had any. We didn't.
All right, I got it. 30-day season may be held... between November 15th and February 5th, with a one-bird daily bag limit. The seasons may also include white-fronted geese, unless specified otherwise. Seasons may be split into two segments. The proposed season dates for Atlantic population migratory Canada geese is December 18th, 2020, through January 2nd, 2021, and January 13th, 2021, to January 30th, 30-day season, one per day. And that's in the AP zone. I'm not going to read all that, but if you hunt Atlantic population geese, You can read that later. These are proposed seasons and will likely be turned into regulations. Oh, man, Emmett sent us a picture of that fly. Oh, it looks like a little frog. That's what it's supposed to represent, a little baby frog. See that?
It's a blingy frog.
Yeah, it's very blingy.
You must be dating Miss Piggy.
Who, the frog?
Uh-huh.
I got it.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. Emmett said, to you, you go, girl. And there is, there's our.
Emmett doesn't realize what he's unleashing.
There's our trout fishing buddy, Bill Cooper. Yeah. Just used a worm. Yum, yum. Had a limit in less than 2 hours. And there Robin and Chris are communicating. So, hey, look, folks, Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road, open for business. Stop by, get your bait, get your tackle. If you need a new rod and reel, they got it. And we'll have more about Clyde's, more about whatever you want to talk about the next hour. Chris just blasted the music in my ear.
That was a subtle.
Time to shut up, Alan. All right. Well, there's the music. Robin, you get to say something here at the end of the music.
You can now. Oh, at the end of the music? Oh, wait.
No, just anytime.
No, I did it too early last time.
Don't wait too long.
You can now get out, stay safe, and practice social distancing, please.